Blog Talk Radio.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. So mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Think of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around to Selma, Alabama. You may leave here for 4 days in space, but when you return, it's the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to take rest. And tell me over and over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. No, no, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I think that's where we're at. By God, I think it really is where we're at. Welcome, everybody, a conservative perspective here on Blog Talk Radio at Patriot Nation Radio. If it's Thursday, it's got to be Patriot Nation. It's good to be here with you. Haven't done it in a while, but we're trying to bring this system back online, and tonight I think was a great way to do it. I'm really excited about the guests we have this evening. His name is Colonel Mike McAllister. He's a former candidate for the governor of Florida and the United States Senate. He currently holds the position as President Distinguished Fellow of Homeland Security on the non-for-profit policy institute Guardians of the Republic. He has a PhD in management from the Union Institute and completed the program on senior executive leadership at the Harvard University Kennedy School of Government, and is a graduate of the Air War College distance learning program with studies in U.S. national strategy, international security, and strategic leadership. Colonel McAllister was assigned to the United States Special Operations Command in the Center for Operations as he sat on Pentagon committees for the Senior Advisory Group and the Executive Steering Group for Secretary of Defense Transformative Initiative. He also traveled to the border with President Donald Trump's staff to assess the security and humanitarian crises that are ongoing there. Colonel McAllister travels the country as a speaker and as a guest on national radio and podcast shows. Ladies and gentlemen, a man clearly of substance and accomplishments, and we are very fortunate to have him with us this evening to talk about a few things for about a half hour or so. Colonel McAllister, welcome to A Conservative's Perspective, sir. We're happy to have you with us.
Yeah, I'm pleased to be here, and I look forward to our discussion tonight.
Well, I know I've gone over some of the things that have gone on in your life. Can you, if you would, just to start things out, tell us what brought you to a lifetime of military service and then beyond that?
Oh, goodness. Well, I was in the very beginning, I was in college, and I needed some money, so I joined the National Guard so I could get a monthly paycheck, and then, you know, graduated from college and got commissioned in the military, and then ended up serving in the Guard for many years. I served in the reserves. I served on active duty a couple of times. My last 5 years, I was an active duty colonel at U.S. Special Operations Command. So I was very fortunate to have such a long career and to meet a lot of the people and to be able to participate in some of the things that we did. I felt like it was perhaps the most contribution I made in my life other than being a parent.
Okay. I'm guessing then, based on what you're telling me, you were in the United States Army?
I was Army, yes.
Okay,
U.S.
All right.
Special
I just
Operations
wanted to make sure.
Command. Yeah, U.S.
Okay.
Special Operations Command, or it's called SOCOM, Special Operations, you know, it's a joint
right.
command, though, so they have all forces there, and that particular, you know, it's a unified command, it's a four-star general that commands it, and they oversee all the SEAL teams, overall, all the Rangers, all the Air Special Ops, and all the Marine Special Ops. So they are a unified command with a global mission. They were the lead element on the global war on terror. And I was very fortunate to be able to serve with some of those people.
One of the things I would like to ask, since we're at a military event right now, your impression of how things are in the military as it exists today. What do you see? Just tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Well, you know, and I'm no longer there, so unfortunately I can't give a firsthand absolute assessment. But from what I can see through the eyes of others and what I hear through the ears of others, I think our military leadership has lost their way as far
okay.
as maintaining the main intent of the military, which is it's an instrument of force that can ensure and protect U.S. national security and vital interest. And instead of focusing on survivability and lethality and mission achievement, it seems like they got off course and worried too much about, you know, gender and drag queen training on the campuses of our bases for the grade school children, and what percentage of this is getting promoted and what percentage of that. They've tried to socialize it with a woke environment, and
right.
that is not what the military is about. You know, it's a very unique sector of society that has a very unique mission set, and it's so different and so unique. I remember Sam Nunn one time, and I'm dating myself, an old senator from Georgia or South Carolina,
right.
I can't remember for sure, said, it's the only sector of our society that is so unique it has its own judicial system. And I think we have lost our way with that, and we need to go back and to remember why we have a military and quit trying to apply all the woke social standards to it.
How seriously do you think, and it hasn't been going on for very long, I'm aware of that, it's only just been a few years, but how serious has this degraded our capabilities?
Well, you know, and I look at, until we probably have a confrontation with a formidable adversary, that will be hard to accurately assess. At this point,
right.
I think we always have to err on the side of caution and perhaps assume the worst instead of, you know, assuming the best and getting caught totally off guard. I am confident we get a new president in that truly understands the unique role of the military and will develop a true national security policy that identifies vital interests that will protect America and the American people, and then get our military back with leadership at the top, and I'm talking about the 3- and 4-star general level, that truly instill that motivation, that pride, that respect, that patriotism, that enthusiasm, that confidence back into our military. So I'm hoping that we don't have to test what we have right now before we can take corrective actions and get it back where it needs to be. And that will start at the top. It's not the troops. It's not the NCOs. It's not the lieutenants, the captains. It's the senior leadership. And that's what is going to have to be, from what I can gather, perspectives and personnel changes.
When you look at the country today, and I know that you've been involved in it, you know, through leadership in the military and also in public service and elected office and running for, you know, office and in politics. As a country, as a citizenry, the United States people, in your opinion, what are the greatest hurdles that we're going to have to overcome in order to make the necessary course correction that we're going to have to engage in?
Well, I think in all honesty, it goes back to our national interest, our vital interest, and having elected officials at the top that truly put Americans and America first. And that's missing right now. And people say, oh, you're being political. Let me tell you what.
No.
That word
no.
political gives a lot of people an excuse to stick their head in the sand. Our elected officials make all of our laws that we have to follow. They tax us. They spend our money. And they are the ones that run our lives, even though many people don't want to see it or can't see it. And what I think we must do is, first, I mean, I make no apologies about it. We got to get Donald Trump back in the White House. He's the one guy that they can't buy and sell. He's not an establishment individual. You know, both parties are scared to death of him because he upsets the apple cart. And from where I'm standing, yeah, we need to get Donald Trump back in. And this time I'm confident he will surround himself with individuals that can be trusted. That, you know, last time he'd never run for anything, and all of a sudden he's president of the United States, and he had to put 2,000 people in position, 2,000 to 3,000, actually. And so they depended quite a bit on the Republican establishment. So for your listeners out there that may be Democrats, this is not a Republican Party commercial. You know, he put people in office that were Republicans, and they let him down. They were not loyal to him nor loyal to our nation. But I'm confident, you know, he learned from that, and that mistake will not be repeated. So we get a man back in the White House that's not on the payroll of Ukraine or China. And people, you know, let me tell you, that's a serious issue. So I think that's where it starts, sir. And fortunately for our country, we have a chance to do that in about 7 months.
Well, Colonel, you and I agree with you on all those points that you made. And one of the things that concerns me, and you'll have a better understanding of this, and I hope you'll share it with our listeners, almost from the time that he came down that escalator to let us know that he was going to toss his hat in the ring and he was running for president, establishment politicians, Democrats and Republicans alike in Washington, D.C., as well as the intelligence community, mobilized against him. And we know that our domestic intelligence services, our foreign intelligence services have been weaponized, and they're programmed to do everything they can to take this guy out. How serious of a battle is it going to be to bring about some equilibrium to where we can neutralize that particular threat from the intelligence community?
Well, and let me add one other pillar to that, to that that formula you just made, and you are right, but we also have mainstream media is in on that as well.
Yes.
So he's up against mainstream media, the intelligence communities, and, of course, the establishment of both political parties. And all four of those see themselves as the big losers if he gets in power because, you know, the national media truly, you know, it's and you think back when in Nazi Germany when Hitler became the chancellor, you know, and he was appointed. But the first thing he did when he was appointed chancellor was he put Goebbels in as his propaganda minister, and they took control of the schools, the education, the newspapers, and the radio and the movie industry. They didn't have television back then, or they would have took control of that too. But, you know, with the media today, obviously it's they're well aware, and they are pretty much in bed with the political parties. But they control the information that most people have access to. And if you can control information, that is a tremendous weapon and advantage. And we look at both parties, the senior leadership, the establishment. They're plugged into the money channels. So they don't want someone to come in. I mean, they're like a ruling elite. And those of us, be it Democrat, Republican, or Independent, that have to get up to go to work every day and pay our taxes pretty much are the ones that keep the world working, and these guys get to sit back and live their life of power and luxury while we do the grunt work. So I think he's a real threat to that. The intelligence community, they obviously want to be able to also control who is being looked at, how they're being looked at, what mechanisms are being used to being looked at, and then they can control. And you kind of have to combine maybe the weaponization of the intelligence communities with the judicial system. So, you know, if you've got the FBI, which truly comes up under our judicial system, but, you know, all of them together, yeah, they can phony up documents on you. They can make false accusations. Then the media propagates it and puts it out. And next thing you know, everybody believes it. So, yes, he's up against all of those things. You're exactly right. But how are we going to overcome this? Well, I can tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to get everybody off the couch. More and more and more people are waking up. I mean, and it's obvious. I've been watching, and I like to watch congressional testimonies because that's not conspiracy, not hearsay. It's witnesses under oath before the U.S. Congress testifying to things that are important to us. And I'm also watching some of the things that are going on in our liberal cities, you know, whether it's Chicago or Denver or New York. They all have liberal Democrat mayors. But the people there are getting fed up with illegal immigration. They're getting fed up with their mayors and their government putting outsiders before American citizens. And it's at the point where the black community is probably in some ways making as much noise as anybody. And I'm happy they're doing it because that's really opening the door, I think, or that we got to face this. And when you've got 30,000 people coming through the border illegally in a day, that this can't go on. If I was trying to break in this country, you don't have to break in anymore. You just go down and walk across the border and say, my name's, you know, Jose, and I just want a better way of life. You don't have to prove anything. You don't have to prove you have any diseases or not. You don't have to prove what your name really is. You don't have to prove you have a criminal record or not. Oh, okay, Jose, well, in 5 or 6 years, we want you to come and go to court. We'll see you later. And it's just beyond ridiculous.
And they're not going to see the inside of a courtroom. You're never going to see these people again.
Yeah. No. So we've got to have, you know, someone that takes command in the Oval Office that will put in a Secretary of Homeland Security and take the handcuffs off and let him take those 20 federal agencies, be it the Border Patrol, be it TSA, be it the Coast Guard, be it ICE, be it HSI, and start cleaning this mess up. And I'm confident that that's exactly what Donald Trump intends to do. And this is a threat to those that don't want that. This is a threat to the drug cartels. This is a threat to China. This is a threat to people that think this is going to increase their voter base. But also this border is a huge threat to America's interest and the interest of American citizens. And I hope everybody listening to this call realizes that this is about American citizens. This is about our children and our grandchildren. And we can't sit back and think this is just a bunch of conspiracy, this is that. I went to the border. I would say this. If you haven't been to the border and seen it yourself and talked to the Border Patrol and had them sit down and really explain what's going on, don't believe what you're watching on TV or reading on social media. The drug cartels have bought most of the property just south of the border, and they have expanded the scale and the scope of their criminal enterprise into human trafficking, child trafficking, sex trafficking, not just drugs. And the
United States government is a silent partner on this.
Yeah, well, under this administration, they absolutely are. You know, I get so tired of watching Mayorkas sit there and lie before Congress that the border's secure. Okay? He is basically saying the American people are too stupid to know any better. And, folks, we're not. But we got to be heard. So I would encourage all your listeners tonight to realize the most important thing is to help their friends and their family realize this isn't just Republican versus Democrat. And they are so focused on making everybody afraid of Donald Trump and don't like his tweets and don't like, because they know if he gets in, their party's over. When he gets back in, their free ride and their little hierarchy and political elitism is over. And what we've got to ask ourselves is, what's the price of gas? What's the price of groceries? Okay, why do we have black citizens in our major cities calling out their mayors that the illegal immigrants are breaking in their cars and their homes, when even the black community in the inner cities is experiencing this and going public about it? My friends, it's not conspiracy. It's in a bunch of Republican elitists saying this. This is the community in our cities, and they've been hit the hardest. And I think that when we start looking at what's going on, every state is now a border state. So, my friends, I would just say this. If you have kids or grandkids, it's all about them. Do you want illegal immigrants coming across that are criminal gangs? You know, stories of the young girl getting murdered in Atlanta, the nursing student. Another woman had testified for Congress. The MS-13 gang broke in their home and strangled their daughter with a lamp cord. This is what's going on. And all you got to do is watch the congressional testimonies. This isn't conspiracy, and the media hides it, and the Democrats try to hide it. I tell you, my friends, it's got to stop, and it's on us. Go ahead, sir. I get a little bit cranked up.
No. Hey, I like it when you guys get – well, because you know what? It's just like in that clip I played. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore. And I'm not talking about fomenting violence, and I know that you aren't either. But the way that we stop a lot of this stuff, and it's something I came up with a couple of years ago, and that is a disseminating and informed electorate.
That's it. And my friend, yeah, and if your listeners go to any events, and you know, in our Constitution, the state legislatures are the responsible and the authority for conducting our elections. So when you talk to people that are running for state house and state senate, I don't care if they got a D or an R or an I behind their name. Ask them, what are you going to do specifically to ensure that our elections are not frauded, are not misrepresented, that the voters are not, that the American citizen voters are not going to be disenfranchised? What are you going to do to make sure we don't have illegal immigrants voting in our country? What are you going to do to make sure that there's no ballot stuffing down at the supervisor of elections office after the polls close? What are you going to do? Because it all starts with our elections. And constitutionally, that is on the state legislatures. So we have got to start holding them accountable, very accountable.
And the only way to do that is, like I said, you've got to know who you're voting for, and you're going to have to be aware of who they are. And if they're not working to meet the needs of the constituency and they're failing for some reason or they're just not doing it, they got to go. And you got to get another guy. And I know that can be – and I know that that sounds frustrating, but and there's no telling how many you're going to run through in order to get the guy who does what you send him to Washington to do, but I don't see any other way.
Well, in our state legislatures that you're sending to your state capital, because that's where they are.
Right.
So we must get the right people in office at all levels. The state legislators, again, my friends, it's not the federal government that runs our elections. Constitutionally, it's the state legislatures. That's your state house and your state senate member. And just make sure that when you run into these people, you ask them that. What are you going to do to make sure? We can't have 30 ballots coming out of one home that only has two registered voters in it. We can't have more mail-in ballots coming in than we mailed out. That's what happened in Pennsylvania. I mean, Rudy, I watched where Rudy Giuliani went before the Pennsylvania. You had more mail-in ballots mailed in than you mailed out. So, you know, all this stuff with the media trying to say, well, they proved there's no election fraud. No, they didn't. And they can count the ballots 10 times. Okay? But if they're phony, they're phony. It's like if I give you 10 real $100 bills and 10 phony ones, that's 20. We can count them two more times, and it's still 20, and that proves nothing. So we've just got to get a handle on this, and that's where our state legislators come in, and then our federal legislators, we must get – someone like Donald Trump back in the White House and then surround him with elected officials at the federal level, our U.S. Congress and U.S. Senate, that will stand up and do what's right for American citizens. It's got to become back to being about we're the bill payers here. We're the ones that built this. This is our country. So let's start taking it back, starting with the election in November.
And you know, we talked earlier about the weaponized intelligence community and how they have arrayed and media and the judicial system have all arrayed against him. And right now it seems to me the Letitia James and Fannie Willis are and this is a weaponized justice system, and it's been dedicated to his destruction. I mean, they want to see if they can't get him in the electric chair, they want to see him die in prison. I firmly believe that. Nothing would make them happier. And sometimes I honestly don't think that assassination would be off the table for some of these guys when they realize what's going to happen and the hammer that's going to fall. And that's a scary thing to say.
Yeah, it is. Well, what we ought to do, I'd love to come on your show again. And we could almost do a show just talking about Fannie Willis and Letitia James and Arthur Engoron.
We can do that.
Yeah. So why don't we do that? We'll schedule and we'll talk about that because she's got a lot of explaining to do. What were you doing at the White House, okay, talking to the opposition of the person you're indicting or trying to prosecute? Yeah, there's a lot that could be discussed, but I don't think we have time today to do that. But those are important discussions.
And the thing of it is, you know, who was screaming collusion, like bloody murder, that never even happened, and who's up to their neck in it? The same people.
Yeah.
You know, that accused Trump of this collusion. But look at they're conspiring at every level of this of his government and the leftists that are in government to try and destroy this guy.
No, there's no doubt, and you're exactly right. And maybe the next time when I come on and we talk about Fannie Willis, we can discuss her trips to the White House with her former boyfriend. We can discuss how Jim Jordan has now subpoenaed records that she basically says, well, when I get time and get around to it. So I believe that all of this is going to bring light on her with the Georgia bar. You got the Georgia Senate has already subpoenaed in defense counsels to test, basically give their story about Fannie. So I think that one's a long way from being over. I do thank you for having me on tonight, and I look forward to coming back.
Well, Colonel, we'll be happy to have you, and at your earliest possible convenience, while these things are fresh, I think we should strike when the iron's hot. So you just let me know whenever you want to come. Folks, we've been talking with Colonel Mike McAllister, and 30 minutes just absolutely blew by. And we still got a lot of things to talk about, but don't worry, he's assured us that he'll come back, and we're going to get him on just as quickly as we can. Colonel, once again, I really appreciate you being so generous with your time and talking with us. I know my listeners appreciate it, and I appreciate it tremendously, and we look forward to having you back.
Yes, thank you so much, and keep up doing good work, and your listeners are vital for our country's future.
Thank you very much. Before you go, one more thing, Colonel, before you go, where can folks find out more about what you're doing?
Well, they can. Probably the best thing to do is to contact Susan, maybe through you.
Okay.
I don't have her email in front of me. I think that would be the best way, because otherwise it gets lost.
Okay, I'm pulling that up right now. I think it's sprice@gmail.com, I'm thinking.
That sounds right.
S Price for Justice. Dot Price for Justice, singlestrand@gmail.com.
And when I say that, we don't send, it's not like that's a common box we use. That's only where we send people, like if we're on a show like yours, where I know that it'll get seen.
Okay. Thank you once again, Colonel. We look forward to having you back. And God bless everything you've done and your future endeavors as well. We look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you, sir. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was terrific stuff there. Colonel Mike McAllister, we'll be looking forward to hearing from him again. Sometimes, it's almost overwhelming when you start talking, especially with the folks that are informed, legitimately informed, and obviously Colonel McAllister is. It can be a little daunting. It can be a little discouraging because it seems, we didn't even get to talk about what happened with the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And there's a lot of speculation going on about that. I haven't made my mind up. I've heard a lot of reasonable and logical explanations on both sides of whether or not it was terrorists, whether it was incompetence, whether it was a disaster, what. And we're not going to get into that, but there are so many things that happen, and you look at it, and it just seems that over the last 6-8 years, there have been so many legitimately existential threats to this country that have faded, they've receded, or they're lying dormant, or they're still continuing. And where you listen to this stuff and you look at it and you read it day after day after day after day after day, it'll wear you down. It'll absolutely wear you down. But we have to stay resolute. We have to stay resilient in the face, in the onslaught of all these things, all these existential threats and these problems that pop up. And honestly, the thing and the reality of the situation, some of this stuff is going to take years to correct. Some of it we'll see results immediately or within the short term. Others, it's going to be difficult. Now, you think about the bridge, the 695 bridge, Francis Scott Key Bridge that fell over athwart Baltimore Harbor. Hold on just a moment, please. I had a bit of a cough. I tell you what, we've got a little bit of time. I think I'm going to take a little musical break, a little musical interlude, and we will be back with more of ACP after we hear some cool songs about cars, and I get a chance to wet my whistle. You're listening to A Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389. Listen to her tacking up now. Listen to her whine, shine, shine. Come on and turn it on, wind it up, blow it out.
What I tell you, some cool cars about songs. Actually, cool songs about cars. James Mosquera, Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. It's been such a long time since I've done this. I was getting ready to say Mojo, which, by the way, Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll have we do a show for the Mojo 50 Radio Network. It's a recorded version, hour long. You need to check it out. Really good. And there's a lot of great programs, by the way, on Mojo 50 Radio. So mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be, because it's the very finest in libertarian and conservative talk radio, just like the top flight programs that you get here on Patriot Nation Radio, talking about Kevin White, the black guy, and the United Patriots Uprising. No, the American Legions program. I'm sorry. United Patriots Uprising is Gary Benford, the other black guy, that he in the stratosphere now. We don't even know what color he is. He's so far out and high and above us and superstarish, and I need to get him back on the show because I love talking with him. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Man, Colonel McAllister was great. I love that. You know, he was trying to apologize, I think, there because he thought he was getting too wound up. But you know what? That's what we need. We need people that feel it. And not only feel it, but can articulate it, can express it. And I'm looking forward to having him back. That was a great interview, and I'm looking forward to talking with him again. Nazis. I hate those sons of bitches, honest to God. But anyway, having said that, we get nailed. And what I'm talking about is conservatives, center-right people. You know, they just throw that term around. They're, you know, we're Nazis. Donald Trump's a Nazi. We're, you know, and on the rest of us who admire Donald Trump and support him, we're likewise goose-stepping bastards. I don't know. Anyway, and this is something that the left does. And the American Marxist left, following the lead of communists and Soviet Union, for almost 100 years now, the left, the American left, has incessantly and mindlessly accused conservatives, and really anyone, not just conservatives, but anyone who opposes their statist agenda of being what? Actually, it's more like 80 years, but you get the idea. Of being what? Nazis. Nazis. And so when you take Nazism and you bind it together with the accusation of racism, then what have you got? Well, you've got the ultimate invective. You've got a pejorative that, you know, can't be responded to practically. And as history is always written by the victors, the Soviet Union, who, by the way, was an ally, a staunch ally of Nazi Germany from 1939 to 1941 with the Soviet Germany, this Nazi Communist Non-Aggression Pact. The communists, with the cooperation of the United States and Great Britain, succeeded in their revising the history of the Second World War, and they recast National Socialism or Nazism as being something from the right wing of the political spectrum, and that's not true at all. It's socialism, National Socialism, socialism, the left. It's collectivism. It's a lighter, sweeter form of communism. Okay, if communism is the really ugly girl, socialism is the really ugly girl through beer goggles. But it's the same thing. So these people who recast this, these American and European academics jumped on this and they dumped it off into the post-war political psyche that Nazism was really ultra-conservatism. That it was right-wing, that it was extremist right-wing, when it never was at all. It's a left-wing thing. And they call us this. Now, what I'm getting at here, and you guys have all heard this, you've all heard this. But the Democrat Party, hear me out. I came across this article the other day by Steve McCann. This was about a year ago. But anyway, the Democratic Party, and keep in mind what we talked about with, and file this under pot calling kettle black, maybe. It's been a stain, the Democrat Party. It's been a stain on the nation since 1828 when it was founded by a virulently racist president, Andrew Jackson. It's been the party of slavery. It was the party of the Confederacy. It initiated racial segregation by legislating and then brutally enforcing Jim Crow laws. It unabashedly aligned itself with and supported the Ku Klux Klan. And they did this for over 90 years. Thus, by supporting the Klan, they promote anti-Semitism, religious persecution, xenophobia. Over the last 60 years, the Democrat Party has embraced and promulgated cultural Marxism, which espouses the transformation of traditional American culture and society. We're 5 days away from fundamentally transforming this nation. You remember that? Remember Barack Obama said that? That's what he was talking about. They've succeeded, the Democrat Party, in undermining the family structure and religious freedom, as well as mainstreaming abortions up to the point of birth, and mainstreaming what was once considered sexual deviancy. The Democrat Party's two most exalted figureheads, number one, the fervently racist Woodrow Wilson, who set the Democrat Party on a path of undermining the Constitution in order to remold the United States into what he saw as a modern administrative state, socialism, and Franklin Roosevelt, who was enamored with and utilized many fascist principles in his New Deal, thus permanently embedding them in the party psyche. This has gone on for years. It's nothing new. If we look and take an unemotional examination of the underlying philosophies and the tactics that the Nazi Party used to gain and maintain power reveals not just the common impulse to, one, weaponize the judiciary in order to eradicate one's political opponents. Let me say that again. Weaponize the judiciary to eradicate one's political opponents. But numerous other similarities between the Nazis and the Democrat Party, and they really can't be ignored. 8 uncomfortable dimensions in that resemblance. First, racial and ethnic division was a central component of Nazi political strategy and philosophy. The Nazi Party, probably the most racially obsessed political party in human history. Today's Democrat Party, second only to the Nazi Party in their racial obsession. Every piece of legislation, every accusation against their opponents, every aspect of American society, even weather and climate and roads, bridges are framed in imaginary racism. The Nazi Party's obsession focused on their perverted belief in the inferiority and superiority of races or ethnicities. This opened the door for blaming a specific ethnic group for all the problems facing their country at the time. The Democrat Party is claiming the root cause of virtually all problems facing this nation is systemic racism, as theoretically instigated by one particular race. The Nazis used fake news, as does the Democrat Party, in order to slice and dice the populace into identity groups and then promulgate grievance-riddled policies aimed at these manufactured factions in order to foment anger at a previously isolated group. In the Nazis' case, it was the Jews. And for the Democrat Party, it's white heterosexual Christians and Jews. In the 1920s and early 1930s, the Nazi Party relied on street riots, property damage, and gratuitous violence to utilize their militant cadre, the Sturmabteilung, the SA, to project power through intimidation while blaming others for the violence. Their ability to terrorize the citizenry and national political leadership played a major role in their ascendance to power as they promised peace and impartial justice if elected. Almost immediately upon assuming the reins of government, they transformed the judicial system into a vehicle of oppression directed towards their political foes and the Jews, while their allies were not prosecuted for any criminal activity. Not dead air, just drinking some Kool-Aid. Grape. Now, the Democrat Party revealed in the summer of 2020 that they, too, have the wherewithal and the inclination to acquiesce to street riots, property damage, and gratuitous violence using their militant cadre, in this case, Antifa and Black Lives Matter, to what? Project power through intimidation while blaming white supremacy and police brutality as the root cause of all the violence that they're committing. In the presidential campaign of 2020, the Democrat Party implicitly promised peace and impartial justice if elected. And almost immediately, upon assuming the reins of government, they transformed the Justice Department into a vehicle of oppression directed at their political foes, Donald Trump and all constitutional conservatives, while their allies were either not prosecuted or treated extraordinarily leniently. Third, in January 1933, Hitler was appointed Chancellor of Germany, and within 4 weeks, a mysterious and in all likelihood staged fire broke out in the Reichstag building, which at the time was the German form of Congress. Nazis blamed it on the communist agitators as their opening salvo in a violent coup. Using this pretext against the communists, the Nazis rushed to arrest and harshly prosecute selected elements of their political adversaries, thus intimidating the balance. They also forced through the Reichstag the Enabling Act of 1933 in March in same year, and that law embedded the Nazis basically as the sole dominant political party and ensured that only Nazis would win future elections. The Democrat Party seized upon, in all likelihood, a set-up disturbance at the Capitol on January 6, 2021, to proclaim that it was an armed insurrection and the opening salvo in a violent coup attempt by Trump, his supporters, and white supremacists. And using this pretext, the Democrats rushed to arrest and harshly prosecute those in attendance on January 6th to intimidate their political enemies. In the footsteps of the Nazi Party, the Democrats immediately pushed to pass the For the People Act, which would have overturned virtually all existing voter laws, embedded the Democrats as the sole dominant party, and ensured that only Democrats would win future elections. I'm not making this up. And don't take my word for it. Antisemitism. Take a look at what's happened in the United States government as far as Democrats are concerned since October 7th of last year. Antisemitism, a foundational principle of Nazism. Antisemitism, through the Democrats' nine-decade alliance with the Ku Klux Klan, has long been foundational in the Democrat Party. Today, many elected Democrats openly denigrate the State of Israel. They glorify the Palestinian terrorists, and they claim the Jews are disloyal, thus fomenting an exponential increase in anti-Jewish attacks in America's city. In the meantime, virtually the entire Democrat hierarchy bows at the feet of America's most virulent anti-Semite, Louis Farrakhan, who has referred to Judaism as the religion of Satan, and Adolf Hitler is a very great man. This obeisance to Farrakhan and his ilk is concordant with the mindless acceptance of unbridled antisemitism by the hierarchy of the Nazi Party in the mid to late 1920s and on through to the end of the Reich. I was born in 1962, and the memories of the Second World War and the reasons behind it when I was a youngster were still very green in many ways. The men who fought that war, my uncles, were guys that were in their mid to late 40s, early 50s. Young men by today's standard. And I think probably since that time, since the war, the Second World War, the increase in antisemitism here in the United States has horrified me over the last 4 years or so. maybe longer. We can go back probably to the time of Barack Obama. He's an anti-Semite. Joe Biden, anti-Semite. I mean, that's the only way this stuff is condoned, all right? Because those that are in the halls of power right now in the progressive Marxist left are anti-Semites. Joe Biden, anti-Semite. Secretary of State Blinken, anti-Semite. They're okay with what's going on with Jews in this country. What's been happening to Jewish students on American campuses is unthinkable. Unthinkable. But it's happening. And it's happening because the faculty and the administrations of these schools are cool with it. It's happening on the streets because politicians on city and state levels really don't want to mess with it. They're okay with it too. The Nazis were really good at indoctrinating its citizenry through propaganda and fake news. Joseph Goebbels, Nazi minister of propaganda, is saying, if you tell a lie big enough and you keep repeating it, if you tell a lie big enough and you say it enough times, people will eventually come to see it as the truth. And this strategy has been and continues to be used to great success by the Democrat Party and their fellow travelers in the so-called mainstream media, whether it's the Russian collusion hoax, this so-called armed insurrection of January 6, 2021, climate change as an existential threat to mankind, the suppression of voting rights, white supremacy running rampant in the streets, the necessity of the lockdowns for the COVID pandemic, or a myriad of other fabrications, the party hierarchy lies with impunity as a means to their ends, as did the Nazis. The Nazis, true to their socialist ideology, preyed on class envy to stoke tensions and resentment as they blamed the Jews and wealthy capitalists for Germany's economic woes. The Democrat Party hierarchy began in 2009 blaming so-called white supremacy together with their century-old tactic of blaming wealthy capitalists for income and economic inequality in order to what? Foment class envy and resentment. But the similarity doesn't stop there, and this is the last thing I'm going to talk about. In an extraordinary juxtaposition, the Nazis were able to vilify the wealthy and the industrialists, while the subjects of this vitriol, the victims of these attacks, financed the Nazi Party. Hitler assured the German corporate titans that despite what the Nazis were saying, despite the rhetoric that they were using against them, the Nazis would leave them alone and would award them lucrative contracts if they sustained the party through what? Massive financial support. The Democrat Party has the same kind of rapport with the corporate establishment here in the United States, in particular with the financial and tech sectors. In the belief that they will be left alone by the Democrat Party, the American corporate elites have financed the party out to destroy capitalism. But they call us the Nazis. Well, terrific, terrific being here with you tonight. Mike McAllister, Colonel McAllister, was a terrific guest. Looking forward to having him back again. I'm going to call it a night. We've done an hour of really good radio here with a terrific guest, a little bit of monologue, and some really cool cars about songs. A conservative perspective is heard here on Thursdays. Invariably at 7 p.m. The show usually runs 90 minutes to 2 hours, but I'm cutting it a little short tonight because I'm tired. I'm an old man and I'm tired. And we do a recorded version of the show on Sundays, and it airs Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. You're not listening. You need to be. because it's the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Mojo50.com. Once again, if you want to keep up with Colonel Mike McAllister, he's doing some really good work with, and you can find about out, and you can find out more about that at www.guardiansoftherepublic.com. 3w.guardiansoftherepublic.com. Once again, I hope you guys have a terrific evening. Thanks so much for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk a little bit. Tomorrow's Good Friday. And a couple days after that's going to be Easter. I hope that you guys have a joyous and blessed Easter. I hope you're surrounded by friends and family and that it is a terrific day of family, of fellowship, and remembrance. God bless you all. God bless America. We'll be back next Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, take good care of yourselves. We'll see you then.